Do you know what killed the podcast? The Ice Age!
That's right, because your geek history lesson on Batman and Robin is now in session.
Cool party.
Hello and welcome to Geek History Lesson. I'm Ashley Victoria Robinson.
And I'm Jason Icy Inman. Welcome to your mind university, because this is the podcast where we take one movie, one character, one construct, and we talk about them in a little bit about less than an hour, sometimes exactly like an hour, sometimes an hour and a half. The time doesn't matter, people. Time is relative. But we are here because Geek History Lesson is the podcast here to teach you about stuff. And today we're talking about what I consider to be one of the most important comic book movies of all time. Isn't that right, Ashley?
Sure. Some people might think so. Joel Schumacher probably thinks so.
What's the movie we're talking about?
Batman and Robin.
Yes, released in 1997. Now, Ashley, why are... First off, we should say that you might be wondering, hey, why does this episode sound different?
Yes, and the answer to that is, well, if you're a patron, you know this, because this is a format that is quite popular over on patreon.com/Jawan in the myriad of extra podcasts that we do over there.
Yeah, go check them out, patreon.com/Jawan.
Yes, this is a Jason and Ashley classic where we record in our car.
That's right. See, Ashley and I, when we go on road trips or we travel about, we don't like to listen to podcasts. We like to make them. We make the podcast.
We are still trying to make the best use of our time, even when we're traveling.
We're trying to be productive. But specifically, we're talking about Batman and Robin, released in 1997. And the reason why we're talking about this movie is not because it's tied into any anniversary or anything like that. We're talking about it because of a fan and a friend that listens to this podcast, Mr. Ted Baselli.
Or Biaselli. We're not sure how to say your last name, Ted, and we've literally never asked you. So maybe next time we see you, we'll ask.
Well, we'll apologize. yeah. I've heard him called as Teddy. I'm going to call him Ted.
Yeah, he's Teddy in my phone. Ted is an incredible human being, an incredible fan of the pod, and truly is the person responsible for all of the nerd stuff that you love on Netflix.
Basically,
so.
The new Dark Crystal is his.
Yeah, he's in the
Punisher
Dark Crystal
is his.
Documentary.
Lost in Space is his. So if generally I'm going to say if there's something you like on Netflix, Mr. Ted is the one to think.
Yeah.
So
when I said... Many podcasts ago, back
on an episode of Geek History Lesson, yes, you said that you had never seen the much lauded, the much hated 1997 Batman and Robin.
And then when the episode was published, Ted texted me immediately and said, "You've never seen Batman and Robin? You're coming over to see Batman and Robin."
To which, this very, probably the longest introduction we've ever done on Geek History Lesson. We went over to his house and we watched Batman and Robin. And I'm going to put him on mark right now. Because Mr. Ted, our good friend, fell asleep during the movie. You and I were the only two to make it all the way through.
Yes.
So that's the reason why we're talking about Batman and Robin. The longest introduction ever. We're going to head straight into the 10-cent origin. Ashley, what is the 10-cent origin?
The 10-cent origin is the first part of the podcast where we tell you all the basic who's it's and what's it's about this movie in case you ever go to a Joel Schumacher-themed cocktail party and someone asks you about bat nipples.
That's right. All right. So take us down that memory lane, Ashley.
Yes. So Batman and Robin is, of course, a Warner Brothers DC movie directed by Joel Schumacher, written by Akiva Goldsman, starring first billed former Governator Arnold Schwarzenegger, former TV star George Clooney, current TV star Chris O'Donnell, outer of, I can't remember his
name. What joke are you trying to pull here? I don't know.
The person who outed Quentin Tarantino for being a real stick in the mud and all-around badass, Uma Thurman, Girl I Know Nothing About, Alicia Silverstone, Michael Goff, Pat Hingle, and Elle McPherson, who I can't believe is named among the top billed cast, considering how little she has to do in this movie. And it was released on June 12th, 1999 in Los Angeles, and then had
that
wide,
is incorrect. It is 1997.
Release. Yep, 1997, sorry. Then had a wide release on June 20th in the United States. Now, Jason, do you want to know the budget and the box office?
I'm going to bet the budget was $120 million.
$160, so you're pretty close.
Okay, and I'm betting the box office was $250.
$238.
Okay.
So you did pretty good on both of them.
So it made its money back, but Barely.
Yes, and this is the second of the Schumacher Batmans, following Batman Forever. And Val Kilmer was originally slated to return to play.
We'll talk about all that. We'll talk about that later. That's not 10 Cent origin stuff. Ashley, stop getting the podcast all mixed
up. I just thought that was interesting.
I can tell that this movie has flummoxed you. We'll talk about all that interesting stuff later. That has nothing to do with the 10 Cent origin.
Okay.
We're going to talk about the next section of our podcast, the Meet Cute. This is the most off the rails geek history lesson, and we're not even 10 minutes into this damn thing.
And we're sober.
Yes. So go ahead and take us into the Meet Cute, Ashley.
The Meet Cute is the part of the podcast where we tell you the first time we meeted a character and how cute it was. And I kind of ruined mine in the introduction. I'm only a couple weeks into having seen this movie for the first time, even though I had a bunch of the toys growing up. So Jason, I will ask you and I will throw you under the bus that we're currently passing to entertain us and say, where did you first meet and cute Batman and Robin?
I first met and cuted Batman and Robin in the Christmas season of 1997. Now, Batman and Robin is the fourth in this series of 90s Batmans. Of course, started by Batman 1989, directed by Tim Burton. Tim Burton went on to win Batman Returns. And then Batman Forever, which I think is the highest grossing Batman movie of the series, not of all time. Of course, that's the Dark Knight, I believe. Then Batman and Robin. Now, I did not get to see Batman and Robin in theaters. The rest of them, I did. Why? I don't remember. But I do remember asking for this on VHS tape.
Mm-hmm.
Kids out there, video cassette tapes are these things that use magnetic tape that progressed or teleported the images straight to our television screens.
They're kind of like really big cassette tapes.
Yes, they're big Betamax tapes. You guys know what those are.
Yeah.
Exactly like that. So I asked for this videotape for Christmas. I got it. And then because I got it and I was so excited because I hadn't seen it, I had no idea that it was bad. The internet didn't exist, guys. So I had no idea that the reviews were bad. So, of course, we generally, me and my siblings, always usually got a movie on Christmas Eve.
That's cute.
And this was the movie we got. And I asked to watch it. We watched it on Christmas Eve, 1997.
Oh, boy.
Now, I will fully admit that me as a kid, the first time I saw this, I liked it.
Sure.
Because I hadn't seen it before as a Batman movie. And also,
I liked Phantom Menace the first time I saw it.
I did, too. Dick Grayson was dressed in a Nightwing-esque costume,
mm-hmm.
which I love. I still love that costume, by the way. So I enjoyed it, but with each subsequent viewing, I could tell that something was wrong. George Clooney is my least favorite of the 90s Batmans.
You like Val Kilmer better than George Clooney?
I do. I think Val Kilmer is much better than George Clooney.
Interesting.
Because George Clooney is just playing George Clooney. But that is my meet cute. That was the first time I ever saw it. And I will stand by that I think that the poster design is actually pretty good. I think it's pretty good.
Sure, yeah.
I think it's some good photoshopping. That's what I gotta say. All right, so let's move into not really the History 101, but this is more like one of our retrospectives. We're sort of gonna talk through the film, thoughts on it, and Ashley, I'm very curious about your thoughts. So let's walk through the film sort of in order, and if you wanna pull out an actor or
a
character arc or whatever, that's fine, okay? So the movie starts very similar to Batman Forever,
mm-hmm.
where we start in media res, where the Bat characters are coming into the Bat Cave and they're going after Mr. Freeze, just like we went after Two-Face. You know, like, Batman Forever set this sort of tone where it's like, okay, there's going to be one villain that's already established,
uh-huh.
and then there's a brand new villain.
Uh-huh.
And in this movie, it's Mr. Freeze. What did you think? Because you've never seen Batman Forever either.
No.
What did you think of the whole suiting up in the Batcave, you know, like quick cut editing, butt shots, neon lights, Alfred being like, I'll order a pizza.
Part of my experience watching this movie was colored by the fact that every time something really gay happened, Ted said, this is so gay. Look at how gay this movie is, starting with this opening scene.
And not that there's anything wrong with that.
No, in fact, that endears it to me even more.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, gay media is right up my alley. I love a transformation sequence. I think part of that comes from my deep love of Sailor Moon, which has a very beautiful, questionably nude transformation sequence in every episode. I think there's a version where you do this even in this movie and it's better than what we got. But I think that starting the movie with the two characters suiting up is actually not a bad idea. Do I think it was executed to its fullest potential? Perhaps not. But the idea of this scene is actually really good. I think it's a good intro to, like, this is Batman and Robin, this is what they do, and hey, Alfred's here.
All right, let's talk about this. This is the first Batman suit that doesn't have a yellow behind the oval. It's a solid black suit. Also has nipples, also has little cape epaulets, or do you call them, or whatever. I dislike this Batman suit. What do you think? Let's talk about the costumes in general.
I also dislike this Batman suit. I think it's ugly, and I think it's chunky. All the Batman suits before The Dark Knight, I kind of describe as chunky, and part of that is the construction of the cowl and the inability to articulate one's head, which means that one's shoulders are also locked off in a really... So it makes the performer a little stockier, right? And they're a little less able to move freely. I can get over that. I think it's an ugly bat suit, though. I like my ideal Batman costume has a yellow shield and a yellow belt. And I think that those highlights really help to break up the composition of the Batman costume. And then I like that a Robin or a Batgirl costume can have the yellow highlights as well. Like, so to me, a yellow is a really important part of the Batman design. But I think, kind of like you alluded to in your meet cute, I think the Robin costume's awesome.
It's really good. They're a fun fact, action figure spotlight's gonna happen right now.
Hey, I have a whole bunch of action figures from this movie.
Yes, you do. Actually, Ashley, you have the Robin action figure that I bought that is this Nightwing-esque Robin suit. It's a Nightwing costume with basically a cape. In fact, I love the logo of this movie because it basically is the Nightwing symbol over the bat symbol.
I love it. I think when it came up, I said, what is that?
And fun fact, actually, when the new 52 Nightwing turned his color to red, I actually said, I was like, oh, like the Batman Robin suit. But continuing action figure spotlight, Sideshow Collectibles is making a Batman statue that has Robin in this suit.
Oh, yeah?
And they showed it at Comic-Con this year, and it looks amazing.
I haven't seen it yet. I'll have to look it up.
It looks really, really cool. They also, I think, made one of him in the Batman Forever Robin costume, which is Tim Drake's costume.
Yeah.
And it looks awesome as well. So, I love this costume. I think actually think that this Robin costume is probably the best thing in this movie, the costume itself.
I think that's a very fair argument to make. Although, I will say... Once you meet Mr. Freeze in this movie,
yes,
I think the costume is really, really clunky, and there are several shots where it's very obviously just like a morph bodysuit with some plastic glued over top of it.
With a lot of lights.
But I do think that the paint job on Arnold is incredible.
Okay, so let's talk about this. We're gonna go into like some of the fun facts and some of the things that made this movie go wrong later on in the podcast. But we're just talking about impressions, Ashley. I want to talk about... We can talk about Arnold throughout the entire movie.
Yeah.
Okay. Arnold is a puppet in this movie. He literally is a bouncy, lunatic Muppet in this movie that is saying nothing but ice puns.
Nothing that actually makes sense, yeah.
Yeah. I think the design of his costume is horrific.
It's... I mean, we've talked a lot on various podcasts about Total Justice. Like, he is that... brought to life.
But yeah, when you see him out of the suit and you see the paint texture on his skin, he actually kind of looks cool.
Yeah, like when he's in prison later on in the movie, spoiler alert for an almost 30-year-old movie, the paint on him is great. They do a little glitter effect that I think is the perfect balance because it makes him sparkly like ice and snow, but it doesn't stray into drag queen territory, which is the danger. His lipstick looks great. They put some contacts on him. Like, I really do think it's one of the other really great parts of the movie is, like, he's fun to look at, his big bald head. And he looks like my Uncle Richard, which makes me laugh.
It makes you think if they had done the classic Mr. Freeze costume with Arnold or some variation of it and just left it where it was this tube and he just had the eyes, he probably would have looked pretty cool.
Well, Mr. Freeze also strays into, like, stupid territory where his suit is powered by diamonds.
Diamonds.
And I do understand, especially if you're doing like, or you're trying to do a throwbacky, sillier version of Batman, which I do think there's room for, and I think Teen Titans Go has proven that. I do understand that diamonds are this sort of classic Batman trope, But to have diamonds power the suit, like, that's ridiculous.
It's really stupid.
And then the fact that throughout the movie they're obviously just holding a cubic zirconia, or like a piece of plastic.
It's a piece of plastic.
That's been cut to look like they're not even well-crafted fake diamonds.
No. Well, that's the other thing you want to go to keep talking about Mr. Freeze in this movie, in the Batman 1987, is that the fact that every time he freezes somebody, it looks like bad plastic.
It looks so bad.
It looks like you just covered people in Walmart bags, if you give that reference.
Which is wild because, you know, there's in the Gotham Central comic, the opening sequence is Mr. Freeze
killing
a bunch of people and using the freeze power and seeing like how scary and how horrible that can be. So to see the complete, now that's obviously like several years later, it has movies like this at its back, but to see it executed so poorly after having seen it executed so well is just kind of disappointing.
Yes. Okay, so there's another aspect. We go through the Bane sequence, they fight Mr. Freeze, Robin gets frozen.
Yep.
And Batman saves him.
Also lifts him. Frozen Dick Grayson. So probably like, how much do you think he weighs? Like 200 pounds?
He's probably 200 easy.
So with the suit on top, so that's probably another 50 pounds. Mm. So he's at $2.50. Then he's frozen. Batman lifts him without bending his knees.
Batman's strong.
So
Batman's real strong.
I don't know if Batman is that strong.
Yeah, he's strong, man.
I know I've enjoyed stories with Bat God, and I get that Bat God has to exist in the realm of the Justice League, particularly Grant Morrison's Justice League. But that sequence where he like thaws Robin out is really just ridiculous.
Well, I want to talk about here the sequence of, this is actually a thing that I like in the movie, but it's not written that well.
Okay.
This is the scene that starts the conflict between Bruce and Dick.
Uh-huh.
And to me, part of the reason why I like it is in this movie, there's a lot of scenes where Dick is like, you're not letting me do what I want to do. You're not listening to me. You're just ordering me around. We're not partners. You're just my boss.
Classic Dick Grayson, Bruce Wayne conflict.
Yes. And it reminds me so much of the conflict in Nightwing Year One, mm-hmm. where it's like,
which is only a few years before this. It's like 10 years?
I don't know where it is. I don't know where it plays into this. I think it might even be after this.
Oh, I thought it was before.
I have no idea.
Okay.
Anyways, so it reminds me of the conflict, the classic Nightwing Dick Grayson conflict, where Dick Grayson's like, I'm ready to move on.
Yeah.
Or I'm ready to be an adult and you're not treating me like an adult. And there's shades of it. I think it's quite clunky because they park it into this idea, and we'll get to full Poison Ivy here in a second, but they park it in this idea of like, oh, who does Poison Ivy love more?
Yeah.
Dick Grayson. And I think maybe that was a mistake, but this aspect of these two brothers fighting each other, and even though it's not, it's such a saccharine line, there's a line that Bruce says at the very end, and it's something that Dick says to him earlier in the movie, where he says, like, you know, in the Flying Graysons, we had this thing.
Yeah, that, we were family.
Sometimes being a partner is like trusting no matter what mm-hmm. your person is saying to you. And then Batman repeats that back to him. And to be honest with you, in a movie that is so clunky, even on that rewatch, I was like, those beats sort of work. Like, those beats sort of are almost like the only things of this movie that work.
Well, I'll tell you this. I actually think this same movie with this same script with these same actors could have been, all of it could have been better, but it very much feels like first take, best take.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are lines that these characters are reading and these men are saying, and it's particularly with Bruce and Dick, where it just feels like, you know when you've just memorized something and you're just saying it to make sure that you know all the words? That's what it sounds like. It doesn't sound like anyone has taken a dramatic pause or has thought about their subtext, which is a lot of an actor's job, is why am I saying these words this way right now? And there are shades of brilliance, like there's single line readings or there's moments where you're like, oh, Chris O'Donnell.
I don't know who Chris O'Connell is.
I'm probably conflating him with another listener and friend, Ryan O'Connell.
Billy O'Connell is the Rocketeer.
Sorry, Chris O'Donnell. He's on one of the NCIS or
Los
CSIs
Angeles.
Or one of those ones. I think he's a great choice for this time.
I agree.
I think he doesn't look exactly like Dick Grayson, but like he's a good-looking young man.
Yep.
But he just says these lines where I'm like, you've been better when you were younger. Or like George Clooney just says these lines and I'm like, are you even thinking about what you're saying? Well, and so I don't necessarily know a ton about the production of this movie, but it just seems like...
We can touch on that a little bit, right?
Yeah, here. It just seems like they said the lines and Joel Schumacher was like, that's fine.
So classically, this movie was rushed.
Which I think you can see.
So this movie was made in less than 2 years.
Wow.
Because Batman Forever was the biggest Batman movie of all time. And so Warner Brothers immediately wanted another movie greenlit ASAP.
Yeah.
The only way to make that happen was to start right away. And so there was like no script, there was no anything. In fact, you can like watch all the documentaries. Even Chris O'Donnell was like, yeah, this movie was rushed.
Yeah.
And infamously as well, George Clooney was basically hired because he was already on the Warner Brothers lot on ER.
Yeah.
And he actually was still on ER when he was filming this movie. He would shoot Batman and Robin at night and shoot ER during the day.
Wow.
Like in there, you can see reports like he talked about it. There were several nights during the Batman and Robin production where he only had like 2 hours sleep.
Yeah.
So
I do also want to say too, before we get too into the weeds, that we're going to lay a lot of this at the feet of Joel Schumacher, but I have seen other Joel Schumacher things that I think are well made and well directed. So,
you know, to be
while
honest
I
with
do
you,
think he's culpable, I don't think he's the only reason this movie turned out the
well,
way
no,
it did.
No, there's a whole billion reasons about this movie, but I also, to be honest with you, I'm going to say this. I don't think we need to talk about Joel Schumacher at all, because I kind of think that that horse has been beaten to death.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
You are correct. Joel Schumacher had made a great film before this,
mm-hmm.
and he's made good films after this.
And a lot of great TV.
So, yeah, he directs House of Cards.
Yeah.
So, I don't really need to talk about Joel Schumacher. I just want to talk about, like, we're just looking at it as is, and
yeah,
then we're
yeah,
talking
yeah.
about some fun things. I don't need to beat Joel Schumacher to death.
I just want to seem, I know we're going to be very critical, and I want to make sure that we are appropriately respectful as well.
Speaking of critical, let's talk about your lady, talk about Poison Ivy
in
this movie.
She's not my lady.
Your lady, Poison Ivy. Uma Thurman, who I agree is also a great casting choice for this.
I'd cast her as Poison Ivy now.
And is just chewing scenery left and right, with like a weird Bronx accent, has the weirdest costumes in this movie, but also the weirdest... She doesn't fit with this movie.
No.
She really doesn't. And to be honest with you, when they were probably developing this movie... And I bet they came up with Mr. Freeze pretty quickly.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Freeze was really popular coming out of the animated series as well.
Yes, and it's also the idea of when you're putting these two villains together, you want stuff that complement each other, right? Like, Penguin and Catwoman are great choices because they're both animal-based.
And they're both thieves.
Yes, Riddler and Two-Face kind of work too because Two-Face is duality and Riddler's about a question and an answer, which is also duality.
Yeah.
But a Freeze person... And a plant person.
Someone probably said it'll be like autumn and winter.
Yeah, it just doesn't work. So let me ask you, I want to ask you this question. Because I think I think Mr. Freeze is like, I understand why they picked him. He is another major Batman
villain. They wanted a woman and she was the only other person they could come up with.
Yes, you can tell they wanted a woman.
Yeah.
But let me ask you this, just off the top of your head. Who do you think would have been a better villain choice than Poison Ivy for this movie?
That's tough because I don't think Batman has a lot of great female villains. Poison Ivy
doesn't even have to be female if you don't want it to be.
But if those were the auspices under which they were working, like Poison Ivy, I understand is kind of the last one in his canon. Besides, maybe Talia. And you're not going to do Talia.
No, not before Ra's al Ghul.
Not in this universe. I mean, honestly, Penguin would have been a better, more obvious connection. I would have done Scarecrow because Mr. Freeze is operating from a place of fear of what will happen to his wife. And Scarecrow is fear-based.
Mm.
That's what I would have done.
You know what I would have thrown in there?
Who?
Firefly. Because then you'd have Fire and Ice.
Yeah, very classic.
And Firefly's never been done in live action, but I understand why you wouldn't do them that way. All right, so let's talk about, what are your thoughts about Uma Thurman in this movie?
So Uma Thurman might be the only person in this movie who understands what movie they're making, because Uma Thurman is making a lot of very strong choices. I think they're bad choices, but I think she's the only person who knows that this movie should not be taken seriously. And I think she is trying with all of her actorly power to make any of this palatable. And while she's fun to watch, it's not good.
No.
And there's no one walking her back. And for me, as someone who does like the character of Poison Ivy, that's not Pamela Isley, and this is not Poison Ivy.
No, it's not.
This is a farcical burlesque dancer, and that's not... A lot of Batman villains, because they were created by men, weaponize their sexuality, which is something you don't have an issue with.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so cartoony, it's so over the top, it is so what a 13-year-old boy would think a sexy woman, and maybe that's because Joel Schumacher doesn't think women are sexy. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just like, it swings too far the other way, whereas I think like Batman and Robin are just like so blasé in one note. She's so cartoon. Her and Arnold are so cartoony.
Yes.
That they don't live in the same world, and it doesn't work for me. Ultimately, is she stunning to look at? Absolutely. Are her costumes made from things they bought at Michael's? 100%. But I do understand watching this why she is the thing. She is the most iconic thing that has come out of this movie.
Well, let's talk about one of your favorite villains, Bane.
Oh, yeah. They I keep forgetting Bane was in this movie.
They turn Bane into a monosyllabic
mook
who just goes, who has the greatest line in the entire movie, where he goes, "Monkey business."
They give him the same treatment that Sabretooth later gets in the first X-Men movie.
Gene Swanson, I think, is the pro wrestler who played him.
Rest in power.
Rest in peace. He's passed away. I mean,
Bane's chunky.
Bane's big, man.
Yeah.
I mean, he's real big. Yes, he is kind of chunky. That's right.
He's chunky by modern standards. Like, he's fine. He's doing great, but...
But yeah, he's literally just a punch-em-up mook in this movie. And as The Dark Knight Rises proved, Bane could carry an entire movie by himself.
It's a waste of making him Bane.
Yeah.
This character should have just been Poison Ivy's henchman.
Should have just been Victor Zsasz.
But, yeah, truly.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, it could have just been Jeep the Mook, you know? Like, it didn't have to be Bane. And I know that this is 97, Bane's really hot. DC Comics might have...
Bane has only been around for 5 years at this point.
Yeah. DC might have really been like, oh, Bane's really popular, we really like him, we'd love him to be used in a movie. But this character doesn't need to be Bane. And then because it is Bane, we get everything is called Venom in this movie.
Basically.
Even Lionel Luthor just is like naming everything Venom, even before Bane existed.
Oh, John Glover.
Yeah.
He says Dr. Jason Woodrue, which is a deep cut
Floronic
DC.
Man.
He's the Floronic Man, the man who dissects Swamp Thing in the anatomy lesson.
Yes.
All right. So lastly, we got to talk about two things. There's a whole subplot with Alfred is dying from McGregor syndrome, which
named after one of the producers.
Yes, which I blame Ewan McGregor for. But also, we get Alicia Silverstone, hot off Clueless, to be Batgirl.
She's the worst part of this movie.
Okay, let's talk about it. She's Barbara Gordon,
yeah.
But she's not Barbara Gordon. She's Barbara something else. I think she's Barbara Pennyworth.
Pennyworth, I think so. Yeah.
Yes, because she is the niece of Alfred's...
Who?
Or she's the daughter of Alfred's sister.
Yeah, she's the niece of Alfred.
Yeah, she's Alfred's niece.
The daughter of his sister Peg, who claims she's from England, even though she sounds like she's from Encino.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen Clueless. Perhaps she's quite good in that. I don't have anything nice to say about this portrayal of this character or this actress. There was a scene where she looked like she had a beard, and I thought that was kind of funny.
What?
The way the lighting was.
Wasn't that during one of the motorcycle races?
Yeah.
Okay.
And she has zero chemistry with Chris O'Donnell.
Yes.
Which is a real bummer because you're like, well, you're two young, attractive people, and I don't know what any of their preferences are, but you're like, surely you can find something that you can do your actor thing with and be like, okay, I'm attracted to you, but I
do
really...
Do your actor thing with. I love that.
Well, I don't want to go too deep cut acting, but you know, if you're not attracted to someone, you're supposed to find a quality about them that you are attracted to,
mm-hmm.
and maybe you really like their eyes, or you really like the way they speak, and
yes.
you sort of use that to inform your performance. I just really thought every time Barbara showed up in this, I thought she was terrible.
Yes.
I've known the lore that she refused to wear the cowl.
Mm-hmm.
Which
the
is,
cowl hurt her hair, is what it was.
You can't feel your hair except at the roots when it's ripped out because it is dead. And look, I get it. She was blonde and that's what she made her career on. But Batgirl without a cowl, to me, that's the whole gig. That's the whole look. It's why I'm not a fan of the current
Sean Murphy design.
I think it looks stunning on the covers. I think for a story like White Knight, where that's a contained universe, I don't mind doing something. But I like my Batgirls in cowls.
Yes.
So for me, like, you're not giving me Barbara Gordon to begin with. Like, she's not Barbara Gordon. She's this other weird contrived character. You're not doing a good job. You're not wearing the suit properly. And you're not even fun to watch with Robin. Like, to me, there's very little to latch onto. Mm-hmm. Now, Jason, you watched this as a young man.
Yes.
Did you, you know, when you were young, were you into it because she was a pretty girl?
No.
Was that enough?
No, never, never. I actually always thought she was terrible.
Yeah.
I never liked her. And I kind of felt the same way as you, where I was like, oh yeah, they should like each other, and they don't really.
Yeah.
Like, I think Chris O'Donnell is putting everything he can into it.
He's trying really hard.
And she's given, like, I sense from Dick that Dick likes her.
Yes.
But I do not, Barbara doesn't care about anybody in that movie. In fact, I don't even think Barbara realizes that she's sentient.
It actually, to call back to the first movie retrospective that we did that only aired on Jason and Ashley's Excellent Adventure, it reminds me of some of the Star Wars prequels.
Yes.
Where you can just so tell that Hayden Christensen and Natalie Portman didn't like each
other.
Don't
like each other, yeah.
And it makes it really tough because their love is so important.
Mm-hmm.
And so integral to that story. And it's kind of like, for me, like, one of my OTPs, one of my favorite fictional couples is Dick and Babs.
Yes.
So to see it, and I don't know why I thought it might be good or why I was so, but it was like the one thing that I was really disappointed by was her Batgirl.
All right, so let's talk about overall. Ashley, were you surprised by the look of this movie? Because the look of the Joel Schumacher movies are very neon, and we're going to talk about a phrase that was mentioned by several executives, toyetic.
Mm-hmm.
Which we're going to get into in some of the fun stuff. But, like, what did you think about the look of this movie? Because, like, there's so many neon lights. There's so many black light scenes. But some of the stuff, like the gala where there are giant monkey people, is so over-designed.
It's ugly.
That it just looks bad. And it looked bad in 19... Even me as a kid watching this in 1997, I was like, this is terrible.
Yeah. I'm not surprised by it because I've seen it memeified enough or referenced enough.
Oh, okay.
In other videos or in pictures and stuff. So, like, I'm very familiar with what the look of this movie is. And the way that I would distill it is this is someone's idea of what comic books and superheroes are who has done no research and doesn't care about the medium. Like, this is what, like, my mom thinks comic books is.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And that's too bad, because even though I do not care for the Tim Burton Batman movie, and I actually think it's just as cheesy as this.
It is just as cheesy as this.
At least there is a point of view there. And this movie, in my opinion, is lacking a point of view.
Well, Batman, I will say this about Batman 89. I like Batman 89 a lot. It's more palatable than this.
Yes.
But it's just as goofy.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's just a different type of goofy.
Mm-hmm.
Just a little bit more palatable. Because, like, yeah, like, I mean, there's a lot of goofy stuff in Batman 89. There's a lot of goofy stuff in Batman Returns.
And there's room for goofiness in superheroes. Mm-hmm. Even in the modern age, even in the, you know, Armor Your Head era, you can do that. You can have moments of levity. I just think here, I just don't think it works.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so any other final thoughts you would like to talk about with Batman and Robin or anything like that?
I just want to say that I knew this movie was going to be bad.
Mm-hmm.
It was worse than I imagined it being.
Oh, really?
It really, really was. Like, on a scale of one...
Like, it exceeded your expectations for how bad it was going to be.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like, I really thought on a scale of 1 to 10, this might be at, like, a 5.
Mm-hmm.
I'd put it at, like, maybe a 3.
Mm-hmm.
Because I laughed, not at the things I was supposed to laugh at.
Yes.
Or I laughed because you guys were laughing at stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even the moments that we think kind of worked, or like the cool Robin costume, like, that does not a movie make. And that's something that you and I debate a lot when we go and see film, is like, just because this was great doesn't mean it's a great movie.
Exactly.
And that this is just a pitfall of, well, nothing here is functioning the way a movie is supposed to function.
Mm.
But it's still, you know, when you look at the box office, it's like, well, it made money though. So that's like a weird thing to try
but
to reconcile.
But it killed the franchise.
It did. Absolutely.
It killed the franchise. And it killed the franchise so bad that Batman didn't come back until for eight years.
Yeah.
And it was tried several times. There were a lot of people that thought, fun fact, a lot of people thought that this killed all comic book movies.
Mm-hmm.
But thank God for X-Men 2 years later.
Yeah.
And Blade.
And then Spider-Man as well.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Ashley, now it's time for us to get into some of the insanity around the production of Batman and Robin. Now, listeners, you might notice that we sound a little bit different. It's because our road trip is over, and now we are back at the GHL home base to record. So you know, that's where you're going to hear any sounds of the road anymore.
Yeah, we're out on the quad. We're not in our usual room, but we're not in the car anymore.
Really quickly, before we get some of through the fun facts of production and various stuff like that, Ashley, what would you give this movie in terms of a rating? We usually give ratings based on our GHL intern, Brego. Oh. Brego, the GHL intern cat. Well, at a scale of 1 to 5 Bregos, where would you put Batman and Robin? Now, to give us a litmus test.
Well, in the car, I gave it 3 out of 10.
Why did you go 3 out of 10? We've never done a 10 out of 10 scale.
I know that. So what's the litmus test?
Well, I want to give a litmus test real quick because people know where you stand.
Mm.
The Dark Knight, Christopher Nolan's Batman movie, considered to be the greatest of Batman movies. Not by me. But where would you rate The Dark Knight if you were to give it a 1 out of 5? Just real quick.
I'd give it like 4.5 Bregos.
Okay, so 4.5. So it's very high on the list. Okay.
But it lacks Robin, so it's not perfect.
Batman and Robin, generally considered to be the worst Batman film of all time. Although I think there's an argument for Batman 66 in that. What's the Brego scale? No 3 out of 10s, 1 out of 5, the normal scale we use.
Give it 1.5 Bregos.
You give it a 1.5.
Give it 1.5 Bregos.
Wow. I'd only give it a 1. And it's barely a 1.
I would give Batman 66 a 1.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You think that's the lower of the two?
I do.
Okay. Well, I have...
People are going to tweet me.
I have an article here that I'm consulting about some crazier things, some of the research I've found. Now, earlier in the podcast, I did mention Toyetic.
Yes. Also, real quick, can we shout out where the article's from? Just because...
Oh, yes.
Crediting on podcasts is a thing now.
Yes. Screen Rant where I'm looking at right now. This is from a Screen Rant article. Now... This is, again, a phrase that I said several times during the podcast, toyetic. Mm-hmm. Now, part of the reason why the production was rushed was because they wanted it to be toyetic. So Warner Brothers worked with toy companies during the pre-production phase to ensure that there would be all kind of cool things to be spun out of the film. They even had a say into much of how the Batmobile looked, which is the whole reason why the entire Bat team changes costumes at the end, even though painting a different part of your rubber costume silver literally changes nothing.
And in fact, it makes it more ugly.
And then there's the scene where they all have those ice vehicles that are so dumb.
Awful.
And they're only in one scene of the movie.
I had a Happy Meal version of that where you pull of the ice vehicle where you pulled it back and then it,
which one? Did you have the Batmobile little like
I had the
swamp
Batmobile
rider or the
and,
Robin motorcycle?
And the Robin one.
The Robin motorcycle is the weirdest one because it looks like, or is the Bat? No, Robin also has like a bumper car.
Yeah, and Batgirl has the motorcycle. I had Robin and Batman, I remember.
Now you got into this actually during the 10 Cent origin.
Yes.
This is a little bit of why
spoilers.
George Clooney was cast instead of Val Kilmer. Now, there is famously and also an interview with Joel Schumacher celebrating the 20th anniversary of Batman and Robin on Hollywood Reporter, where Joel Schumacher becomes very honest,
mm-hmm.
and he claims that it was the world tour of Batman Forever and all the press and all the publicity that went to Val Kilmer's head. And that's the reason why Val Kilmer did not come back. Joel Schumacher said he thought he was bigger than the movie. Actually, the real reason is that Val Kilmer had already signed on to do this movie called The Saint.
Yes,
which is a remake.
That's what I had read,
A remake of this old television series. And he also, right after that, was going to shoot this movie, The Island of Dr. Moreau, with Marlon Brando. And because they decided to rush the production of Batman and Robin, Batman and Robin was going to shoot at the same time as both of those films, so Val Kilmer was automatically out. Now, I will tell you this.
Tell me.
The Saint is mediocre at best.
Can I give you my hot take on The Saint?
What?
My hot take on The Saint is that boys who are 18 and have never actually seen a movie that wasn't directed by Quentin Tarantino, they think that The Saint is like the best movie ever. Like the people.
Can I ask you why you make that statement, since The Saint has literally nothing to do with Quentin Tarantino?
No, but so from my experience, I never heard about The Saint until I was in university.
Okay.
And there was like a handful of like actor film nerds who like think The Saint is like all that.
It's not.
And they're the same people who, up to that point, the most different and artistic movie they'd ever seen was something like a Quentin Tarantino movie.
Okay.
Like the same people who think like...
I think you're stretching for that analogy there, but you know, I will just say.
Well, that's been... Okay, fine. Fine.
The other one, have you ever seen The Island of Dr. Moreau?
No.
It's barely watchable.
I mean, to be fair, that's how I've heard most of Val Kilmer's movies described.
Oh, really? Wow.
The only movie that Val Kilmer's in that I've ever heard anything good about is Top Gun.
What about Real Science?
I don't even know what that is.
It's a movie about real science.
I don't think so. I think our comic book science is about real science.
That's very true. That's very true. Also, in another thing about Batman and Robin was, did you know that they briefly considered David Duchovny for Batman?
What?
Because David Duchovny was hot on the X-Files at the time.
David Duchovny's never been hot.
Well, I mean, hot in terms of popularity.
I'll tell you this. I'm also not fond of David Duchovny, but I think there's a role for him as a villain, a comic book villain.
Sure.
In the 90s, he's not a Batman. No.
Two other names that were batted around and considered for Poison Ivy was Demi Moore.
Sure.
And Sharon Stone.
I love Sharon Stone.
Apparently, Julia Roberts had mentioned that she was upset that she never got a call about Poison Ivy and that she would have apparently considered it. Joel Schumacher said in the Hollywood Reporter interview that they never considered her. And he actually said, mm-hmm. He was like, I was friends with Julia Roberts. If she would have picked up the phone and called me, he was like, she would have been Poison Ivy.
Is this movie when does Hook come out?
Way before this.
Okay, so I've always heard the story that it got around Hollywood that she was difficult to work with after Hook. They called her Tinker Hell on set because she was so insufferable. So if that's true, who knows? Because, you know, Hollywood stories and rumors. But if that's true, it doesn't surprise me that no one from this production would have approached her.
Interesting. Now, we got to talk about Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yes.
During this
top
movie.
Billed.
Top billed. Yes, because he's the biggest name in this movie.
The Governator, yeah.
George Clooney is a TV actor. And Chris O'Donnell, while he had been in some bigger movies like Send of the Woman, was not a box
was
office draw.
Was he Stand By Me? Was he like a kid actor?
No. His big movies are Send of a Woman, Mad Love, and The Chamber, which is a John Grisham movie.
Oh, I thought he was a kid movie. Okay.
No.
That's fine.
So how much do you think Arnold was paid to be
the
in this
movie? The budget is $160?
Yes.
Something we talked about that earlier. I think Arnold was paid, it's got to be something incredible.
Well, you have to put it in 90s standards.
$10 million.
Higher.
$20 million.
Higher.
$40 million.
Way lower.
$30 million.
Lower.
$20 million.
$25 million. He was paid $25 million for 30 minutes of screen time. He's in that movie 30
and
minutes.
And there's also a rumor that he only shot for like 16 days, 12 days, something like that.
There is a rumor out there as well. I've never found...
Rumor and conjecture.
I've never found this confirmed anywhere. That unless you can see Arnold's face in the suit, it is not
it's a double,
him.
Yeah.
It is his stunt double in that thing. And I've always heard the rumor, and again, I have no idea whether this is true. If you're a Geekish Lesson listener that worked on Batman and Robin, please let us know.
Or if you have a link to a source.
Yeah. The rumor going around is that he shot 18 days in this movie.
Yeah.
He was literally in for 18 days.
If people don't know, this movie would have shot for way more than 18. 18 days.
I would guess 60.
Yeah, 18 days is a very short time to be on set for a production like this.
Now, the other thing that's interesting about this is that this is Schwarzenegger at the end of his star power.
Of
I
his
believe.
Peak, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the peak Schwarzenegger. Yeah. Because in the 2000s, he started making like really bad, like The Sixth Day. It's not good. There's a movie where he's a...
I've never even heard of that.
It's with Arnold meets clone of Arnold. That they fly helicopters. You fly a helicopter, I fly a helicopter. Oh, wow. Get to the chopper.
Good for Arnold.
Yeah. I saw it in theaters. And there's a movie where he was a fireman and he fought the devil, who was played by Gabriel Byrne.
That sounds awesome.
I think it was called End of Days or something like that.
That
I can't remember.
Anyways, awful.
My argument about Arnold Schwarzenegger, and I think I've said this on this podcast before, is that Arnold is best when he's playing a larger-than-life figure. When he plays a normal Joe, I don't believe it. So that's why he's amazing as robots or Conan the Barbarian or the guy who kills the Predator.
He's also a person who is much more interesting as Arnold Schwarzenegger and much more charming than in anything. You know, I know he's not the greatest human, and I know he had an affair, but he did raise that kid, so that's kind of cool.
Well, it's a fun fact that you brought up the affair there, Ashley, because...
Oh, did he kiss someone on set?
Oh, no. The affair happened during the production. of Batman and Robin. Because people have backdated that. It has been said that John Bon Jovi, musician John Bon Jovi.
Oh, I'm aware of John Bon Jovi.
Hand-delivered Cuban cigars to his good pal Arnold Schwarzenegger several days of shooting.
What?
Yep. There you go. Fun fact. This movie's bonkers. Okay.
I mean, I didn't think when we got into this that John Bon Jovi was going to show up. Good voice, bad music.
So speaking of Robin, let's talk about Chris O'Donnell.
Chris O'Connell, I'm pretty sure.
No, that's his evil twin brother.
From the mirror.
Chris O'Donnell, in the Making of Batman and Robin documentary that they did the big 20th anniversary, he said that he's watched the film and been unable to recall filming certain sequences. And he's like,
Is he a drunk? Is he a Daniel Radcliffe type?
No, he actually just claims that like the shoot was so fast that it was so breakneck that he's like, I can't tell you. He also claims that he's like, I can watch certain shots in the film. And he's like, I can't tell you whether that was me or my stunt double.
Interesting.
And then he says, and I quote, I was in a lot of scenes with Mr. Freeze, but I didn't work a single day with Arnold. Not one single day. I was on the set with him a lot to hang out and to talk to. I did a lot of publicity with him. I took a lot of photos with him, but I didn't actually work with Schwarzenegger.
Wow.
Yeah.
I appreciate his candor. Mm-hmm. I really do. But that's wild to think about.
That is insane, right? Because
he's in several fight scenes.
They're in so many scenes together. Yeah, what? Every time Mr. Freeze is on screen, Batman and Robin are there.
Almost,
basically.
Except when he's in prison. Wait, who's the other wrestler who's his prison guard?
Jesse Ventura, Governor Jesse Ventura. So you have a fun fact about Batman and Robin that specifically relates to George Clooney and his office. And I would love for you to tell us on the podcast.
I actually shared this
I get into my George Clooney fact.
A couple weeks ago on Geek History Lesson, that in his office, he keeps a photograph of himself as Batman. And so there's a lot of different theories and conjecture about why that is. Now, the second time he was voted sexiest man alive, he said that he was flattered and he loved being voted sexiest man alive by People Magazine, the lauded publication, but the coolest thing he'd ever done was play Batman. And so some people claim that he keeps this photo to remind himself of how cool it was to play Batman. Some people say that it's to remind himself never to take a role just for the money. And some people say it's to remind him to pick roles carefully. So either he's going full Heath Ledger Joker and telling people different stories, or, people lie.
Well, I'll say this.
But if I played Batman, I'd keep a picture of me as Batman around.
I would too. And my action.
Let's be honest.
And the poster.
Yeah.
I respect George Clooney.
Sure.
George Clooney is an Oscar winning actor who I think is great.
Mm-hmm.
He is an Oscar-nominated director who I think he's actually a good director.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a pretty decent writer, too.
And he seems like a decent human being.
I've always heard in several interviews him saying he does apologize. He takes the blame for this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, people ask about Batman and Robin. He's like, it's me. It was me. I'm Batman. The movie's called Batman and Robin. It was my fault. And I would say that I think he puts that picture up, to remind himself. Because from Batman and Robin, that's where he starts picking more interesting films and doing interesting things. So to tie into that, wearing the bat suit, there's all these stories out there. The bat suit is not pleasant.
Everyone has a bat. Christian Bale's got bat suit stories. Affleck has bat suit stories.
Yeah, Christian Bale's, I've always heard the very famous piece of advice. Christian Bale said that the mask pinched his face and gave him headaches.
Migraines,
And he said he used the headaches into the anger of Batman.
Yeah.
And apparently when him and Ben Affleck met for the first time, it was right after Ben Affleck was announced as Batman, Christian Bale's advice was make sure they put a damn air conditioner in it.
Yeah.
To which that was part of Ben Affleck's request, and they did.
And Affleck's suit had a whole water cooling system that they built.
Yeah, and his was the first one that had a cooling suit. Well, George Clooney didn't have it that easy. So apparently the suit was so complex to put on and take off that it was almost nearly impossible to take any kind of a break in between filming.
Yeah.
And Clooney has claimed over the years that he was like, yes, I urinated in my suit.
Yeah.
Because he was like, I did not want to stop filming for potty breaks for the hour it would take me to get out of this suit.
No.
So there you go.
Don't pee in your suit.
Yeah, don't do that, Batman. Can you imagine what he smelled like?
Bad. Oh, he probably smelled anyway, but man. You just look, Batman always has a jock. You just make sure that the jock can come off. There's a little window on there. Flip it back up. No problem.
Now, I want to talk a little bit about this movie killing the future of the Batman and Robin franchise.
Okay.
And I think maybe in the Geekosan Extra, we can talk about Batman Unchained or Batman Triumphant, which would have been the fifth Batman movie in this series.
Cool.
But after this movie, mm-hmm. Joel Schumacher actually went to Warner Brothers and asked to make another Batman movie.
Mm-hmm.
Now, actually, it is a famous comic book storyline that Joel Schumacher asked to be able to adapt. Would you like to make a guess about what famous, now 1997,
yeah,
what famous Batman storyline Joel Schumacher was like, let me adapt that.
I have two guesses.
Okay.
Dark Knight.
Incorrect.
Nightfall.
Incorrect.
I don't know.
Batman Year One.
Batman Year One?
He wanted to reboot the franchise with Batman Year One, which when WB said no, they later sought out a different filmmaker, Darren Aronofsky, who was also going to make a Batman Year One, which, by the way, everybody out there, if you want a fun hour or two of Googling, oh my God, go Google what Darren Aronofsky's Batman Year One is. It's bonkers.
Really?
It is. Batman lives in an automotive garage with an overweight mechanic named Alfred. I am not joking. But all this Batman Year One stuff eventually led to
Batman Begins.
The idea of rebooting Batman, and it went to Christopher Nolan taking up Batman Begins. So yes, everyone, you have Joel Schumacher to thank for Batman Begins. So,
well, you have Joel Schumacher to thank for a lot of Batman Begins because it is a direct response.
Oh, 100%.
To it's that so era world. Of Batman movies.
Yes. The action sequences in Batman and Robin were one of the first movies to ever use CGI stunt
work.
You
surely can see it. There's no physics in this movie.
The sky surfing. Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Oh, so dumb.
Ashley, have you ever heard R. Kelly's Gotham City?
No, I don't listen to R. Kelly. He's a rapist.
I know. But he had a very famous song on the soundtrack called Gotham City. It's like, Gotham City, City of Justice.
The only R. Kelly song I know is the like 8 minute long song where he's in the closet.
Mm.
I know that one.
Yes. Did you know this was the first Batman movie to never to receive zero Oscar nominations?
No.
Yep.
The first but not the last? Or the first. That's
I think
okay.
I think it's the only one to ever receive
it's
none.
Okay. This is the only one we did research on, so it's fine.
Yes. Yes. So Batman and Robin was so bad.
How bad was it?
The 18th annual Razzies.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Invented a new reward. Or a new award, excuse me. And reward for Batman and Robin specifically. They nominated in the category of worst reckless disregard for human life and public property.
Wow. Oh, can I tell you something I like about this movie?
Sure.
Even though it's super stupid, I love that giant statue that holds up like the train tracks in Gotham City.
Oh, those insane.
I love those. They're real dumb and a complete waste of city money, but right. They looked cool.
And finally, to end off the fun facts, I want you to know that Batman Robin was voted number one in Empire Magazine's poll of the worst movies ever. Now,
was the room up for consideration?
I'm going to tell you, yes, actually it was.
Oh, wow.
The number two film on this list.
Uh-huh.
Now, Batman and Robin received three times as many votes as this film. The number two film is John Travolta's Batman. Oh, excuse me, Batman and Robin. John Travolta's Batman and Robin. I don't know why.
It's just he's Batman and Tom Cruise is Robin.
Oh, my God. Battlefield Earth.
Oh.
Yes. Some of the other movies in the top of that list are The Love Guru. Do you know that, Mike?
Yes, Myers, my countryman.
Mike Myers. The Room.
I love The Room.
Halle Berry's Catwoman.
Saw that in theaters.
And then also featuring another Batman, Geely.
Oh, Jiggly,
the Ben Affleck,
yeah.
Jennifer Lopez. Yeah. Also, Coolio is in this film, everybody. We should mention that. Coolio is in Batman.
Who is Coolio?
He's that rapper that like starts the races. He did Gangster's Paradise.
You're saying all that like I'm supposed to know.
I hope you know it.
With my music taste, I have a severe case of the Caucasians.
Yeah, all right. So, all right, cool. Let's move into the recommended reading. Of course, it's going to be the film Batman and Robin. Mm-hmm. And of course, I don't know. Surely there's a tie-in book, right?
Yeah.
Something.
Yeah.
Should put a good Batman on there somewhere.
Batman Year One?
Yeah, put Batman Year One on there. Yeah, there we go. Let's balance it out a little bit. Let's put it straight in. Okay. Yeah. Also, everybody, I wanted to remind you out there, you know, we always recommend really good books at geekheroeslesson.com/recommended-reading, where you can find our list for the entire podcast history. You can also go to jasoninman.com, that's my name, /store, and you can get signed copies of the books that we write, including my book, Super Soldiers, Jupiter Jet, and Science.
Intern Brago just interrupted. That's why the
laugh. GHL intern Brago was just interrupting the podcast there. So you can go over there. We have signed book plates, all kinds of special stuff. jasoninman.com/store. They're excellent gifts at all times of year.
Jason, do you know who wrote the Batman and Robin novelization?
I'm going to say Marv Wolfman.
Peter David.
Oh, good for Peter David.
So maybe I'll put that up as well.
You should. Peter David, I'm glad he got
God bless Peter David.
I'm glad he got that $5,000 check for writing a script. Yeah. For literally like typing up a script. Good for him. Okay, so now we're going to move into, guys, don't forget, you know, we're into the end of the podcast here. Don't forget to follow this podcast on iTunes and Spotify, everywhere you can find podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe, leave us a like, leave us a review. Don't forget to follow this podcast on all the social medias. Where can they do that, Ashley?
You can do that at geekhistorylesson.com, facebook.com/geekhistorylesson, or on Twitter at @GHLpodcast.
Yeah, don't forget to follow me on Twitter at @Jawan. Follow Ashley on Twitter at @AshleyVRobinson. And don't forget to support this podcast, this free-to-you podcast, patreon.com/Jawan. Hashtag stick around. I really don't know what to say here.
Well, you didn't.
Do you think we've covered this movie enough? We didn't. We kind of glazed over the movie here, Ashley. We did. We just, you know, we kind of like, we didn't go into the nitty gritty, scene by scene, second by second.
No.
But does Batman and Robin deserve a minute by minute podcast?
I'm sure we have lots of listeners who like those
we're gonna
podcasts.
Nip it in the bud right now.
I'm sure we may even have listeners who make those podcasts. No movie deserves a minute by minute podcast.
You heard it right here.
Not a single one of them. Absolutely not.
I mean, are we missing anything on this movie? I feel like, you know, here's what I feel about Batman and Robin. Batman and Robin's like a black hole.
Uh-huh.
You look at it and you're like, there's some neat stuff in there, but I don't quite understand.
I don't want to go in there. Well, you're also.
And I don't want to go in there.
But it's also, it's so convoluted. There's so many warring ideas. Like, there's the idea of like Bruce Wayne and his girlfriend who says two lines.
Fun fact, Julie Madison, real Batman girlfriend in the comics.
Yes. You know, and the idea of like.
We should say, by the way, the gossip columnist is Bob Kane's wife.
Yes.
In that movie.
You know, like they kind of touch on that idea, and then that kind of like dies like a fart in the wind, and like the McGregor syndrome is like the same thing, and it's all very strange.
It's all weird.
It's all weird and bad.
What about where Mr. Freeze makes his men sing Heat Miser, the Ice Miser?
Oh, no. How I think we should end this podcast?
Mm-hmm.
Tell everyone your favorite Mr. Freeze joke.
Cool party?
Yeah, that's Jason's favorite. He laughed so hard.
Yeah, yeah. Because he's just like, because it cuts to him and he does the thumbs up and he goes, cool party. It just comes out of nowhere.
I know, but it's the one that like is the least.
Pheromone dust.
It's the least punny
yes.
of them all.
Yes, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. This movie's bad, guys.
It's real bad.
Gals and non-binary pals.
Actually, everybody in the world knew this, but
this
you.
This movie's bad.
It's so bad. You just heard how bad the movie is. Now you've experienced.
You were born in the bad.
I was born.
This is your first, Bane. This was your cinematic debut.
Yeah, she was.
Can you talk about what it was like working with Joel Schumacher?
I didn't have many lines to learn.
Did you? Did you work with Arnold at
yes.
all? Did you have scenes with him? He actually showed up on set.
He did.
How was that experience?
He was very sweaty.
Were you sweaty?
Of course, I'm wearing leather.
What was it like working so proximal to the beautiful Uma Thurman?
Challenging.
Would she look you in the eye?
Of course she would.
Mm.
She could see that the fire was rising.
In your loins?
Don't be so gross.
Well,
I'm burned. If I have to tell you to chill out, what's the problem here?
I'm glad that
Yes.
I'm glad that you didn't have to ice skate.
There's a deleted scene of Bane ice skating. Yeah.
With a Bane branded credit card?
You don't need a credit card to ice skate, actually.
Well, that's the other stupid thing that they do, right? Is the bat credit card. Look, one of us here is an expert on ice skating, and it's not you.
No, I think it's Bane.
It's not.
It's very much Bane. I did have fun raising the bat signal.
Uh-huh. That's the thing that you did.
I raised the bat signal.
Did you die in this movie?
Oh, no. They just kicked me. And then my hose sprung out because it did.
Oh, that's right.
And they didn't even touch it. Go back and watch the movie. They don't even touch the hose.
You got skinny again.
And they beat me.
We watched this movie a couple weeks ago. I've already forgotten so much of it.
Good. I think that's the proper way.
Okay.
You've returned for your doom.
All right, well, Bane, since we have you here.
Yes, monkey business.
Would you please dismiss the podcast?
You didn't even do your outro.
Well, you can do it.
I sound like Jimmy Stewart now.
That's it. We're going off the deep end. This movie is so insane. All right, thank you so much for listening. I am Jason Inman.
I'm Ashley Victoria Robinson.
Goodbye, and class is dismissed, my wonderful bat friends.